Welcome to the Save the Frogs podcast. I am Dr. Kerry Krieger, the founder and executive director of Save the Frogs. I'm here in western Ecuador on the Pacific coast in Tibuga in the province of Manabí. And I've been in Ecuador for about 10 days. Really amazing country. And I've been traveling around with Chelsea Carson, an amphibian biologist who has been living in Ecuador and conducting research on amphibians for a Fulbright grant. And I'm very happy to have Chelsea on the show today.
Hey, Kerry. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's great to be able to talk to you about Ecuador and amphibians and the future of Save the Frogs in Ecuador. Can we start by just having you tell us a little about your career path and how you ended up saving frogs in Ecuador?
Absolutely. So it started with I went to Colorado State University in Fort Collins, where I studied conservation and wildlife biology. From here, I slowly started to discover the love for frogs, and therefore my junior year, I was awarded a community service learning project where I was funded, and I hosted the 5th annual Save the Frogs Day in Fort Collins, where I partnered with a few local organizations, and this really started to drive my desire to make a difference within the community, specifically through amphibian awareness. So I continued my studies through Colorado State, and I ended up doing an intercambio, a cultural exchange program, my last semester of undergrad, where I came to Ecuador for the first time through the SEBA Foundation. And I had an internship, through your help, I may add, with an organization called Tropical Herping. This kind of allowed me to dive into the amphibian biology world and also the ecotourism world. So it was a really interesting experience to mix those two. I discovered that this is the path I want to take my life on, and so I made some really great connections with Juan M. Guayasamin, a researcher and amphibian biologist here in Ecuador, and therefore I spent that year, this was 2014, writing a Fulbright grant, as you mentioned, which I found out last spring I was awarded. So I returned to Ecuador this past September and am now fulfilling that research grant, which is a really unbelievable opportunity. I'm excited to have you here, and I'm excited to have returned.
Chelsea and I have been traveling around Ecuador setting up a Save the Frogs Ecuador Eco Tour, and our goal is to bring lots of people from outside of Ecuador to this country to teach them all about wildlife and Ecuador's culture and importance for biodiversity. And Chelsea, can you tell us why exactly Ecuador is important for conservation?
Ecuador is an extremely interesting country. As far as South America goes, it is very small in size, but yet its species richness is up there with Brazil and Colombia. So it's a really incredible place that's easily accessible within just a few hours of driving. So Ecuador in particular has a variety of ecosystems all within this small range. It has the Andes, the Amazon, the Paramo, which is a high alpine ecosystem. It has the montane forest as you get a little bit lower, and then you get into the cloud forest, which is where I research, and it also has the Pacific coast, known as the dry forest. So Ecuador has all of these amazing ecosystems in just in a small area, which means that there's a lot of people moving into these areas and a high risk of habitat loss, deforestation, cultural involvement through society. And so we're working to conserve all of these beautiful ecosystems within Ecuador. There is a mix of native cultures that you get from the into the Andes and the Oriente. A lot of the tribes are still living there and a lot of the coastal people. And so it's an interesting mix with the cities now, with our big international centers as Quito and Guayaquil, as we develop more into this Western society. So I would say Ecuador is just an incredibly unique place for the fact that it has an abundance of resources, as of now, a relatively stable population, and a huge opportunity to expand, both in biology, ecotourism, industrial, all of that.
Amphibians specifically, I know Ecuador has over 400 species, which is incredible. As a comparison, United States has about 296, and Australia has about 225 species. So we're in a country much smaller than United States. It's about the size of Colorado, is that correct?
Yep, yeah. To put it in perspective, Ecuador is about the size of Colorado, pretty much equal to Nevada.
Yeah, so Ecuador has about 47 times as many amphibian species per square mile as we do in America. So incredible biodiversity. And what would you say are some of the main threats to the amphibians in Ecuador?
Right now, the main threats are through the extraction industries. So there's a lot of oil extraction. There's also a lot of mining going on. The biggest thing that starts this is deforestation. So we're going into these pristine ecosystems such as the jungle and deforesting it to build roads, which allows access, which previously was inaccessible. And so now we're bringing in extractive properties, more people, resources, all of this into these ecosystems that used to be untouched. So I would say the biggest threat we have is the deforestation of the land. About 98% of the coastal dry forest has been deforested in Ecuador. This is more due to humans. There's a lot of development to bring in retirement communities. Everyone wants to live on the beach. And so there's different threats facing each unique ecosystem. But I would say as a whole, the largest threat is development, which leads to habitat loss, extractive properties, which is oil, mining, stuff like that, which leads to quality degradation of the land, where we're contaminating the rivers, the soil, and then also, again, with habitat loss, we're cutting down those forests and those habitats for the species that occupy them. And so these would be the two largest threats.
Okay, and would you say that the Ecuadorian government is facilitating the spread of roads and of oil and mining?
It's an interesting collaboration right now between the Ecuadorian government and the ecosystems here in Ecuador. They actually were one of the first countries to give rights to nature. So they wrote in their constitution that nature has a right to exist, which is pretty revolutionary in its thought. We don't see that in very many other countries. The issue is it hasn't really been held up. It's more just been put on paper. And so I would say that the government would like to preserve. It's just, it's a developing country. And so it's caught in between providing for its people and giving them increasing growth, industry, population, they've got to feed everyone, and then as well as trying to preserve the environment. So it unfortunately right now is a really kind of a hot topic. It's a controversial issue here in Ecuador. We're seeing, I'm sure you've heard of that Chevron case against the whole country of Ecuador for drilling in the Amazon. So a lot of this is going on right now. I'd say the government ideally would like to protect the natural state of things as they put it in their constitution. However, this isn't being put into action.
Okay. Sounds like a perfect place for Save the Frogs to spread some education and awareness.
Exactly. I think the first step to conservation is education.
Before we move off the topic of threats, I also want to bring up that we were driving through Western Ecuador and saw many, many miles of palm plantations for palm oil and also bananas. And so agriculture is a huge issue throughout Latin America. Pretty much everywhere I go, I see lots of agriculture displacing rainforests.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you mentioned Ecuador has rainforest, cloud forest, dry forest, páramo. Is there anything you want to say in specifically about those ecosystems?
Definitely. So what's unique about each ecosystem that Ecuador contains is that within these ecosystems, there is a large population of endemic species, which means that they only survive and exist in that area. And so this is really incredible and also relates to the high species richness that we find here, is because these species aren't found anywhere else in the world. And so within the cloud forest, we have in a huge endemic species, especially up because the Chocó region from Colombia is coming down and meeting with those rolling hills of the Andes, so it's high elevation. This is incredibly unique to Ecuador and a beautiful ecosystem, which I'll talk more about. Specifically, you find the same with the dry forests in the Páramo and the Oriente, which is the jungle. They contain each their own special niche of species distribution, of plants and animals, and within that, people as well. So these ecosystems are something to be, I would say, studied and definitely conserved.
And I know that you are studying amphibians in Mashpee, Ecuador. Can you tell us about your project and the importance of Mashpee and some of the things that are taking place in the community with the local people there?
Yes. So Mashpee, Ecuador is a little community located northwest of Quito, about 3.5 hours. I have started an amphibian conservation and community sustainability project there. It's a unique ecosystem, as I just previously mentioned, because it's located in that Chocó region of the cloud forest, but it's still kind of that high elevation. So there was actually a reserve, the Mashpee Protected Area, where the Mashpee Lodge is located, that was dedicated in 2011 as a protected site. But the community just below it still contains this beautifully rich ecosystem. However, it's not within the protected area. And so what's happened, as you mentioned before, with the palm oil and the bananas, is monoculture has come in. Mashpee is a really unique and crucial part to this ecosystem, because this whole region is still considered in the municipality of Quito. So the governance is the same as the city, which is interesting when you're getting into more rural areas as far as water quality and all of that, and farming. So my project in Mashpee is looking at the differences of monoculture, agroforestry, and primary forest. I specifically look at the different species distribution and abundance within these sites. Therefore, the hope is to be able to write and implicate what will happen in the future, because we both know that amphibians are they're great bioindicators. So this means that they have the ability to tell us what is happening as the environment changes and implicate how this could possibly affect larger species such as ourselves. So my project, to give a bit more detail, is going into specifically palmito, which is heart of palm, which is a very popular monoculture here in Mashpee, and they have been given subsidized to fertilizers, and so a lot of chemicals are going into the land there. So I'm looking to see if there's a difference between amphibians' abundance and which species are present, which help us know which are more resilient to this intake of fertilizers. Therefore, I'm using comparison sites within agroforestry, which is permaculture, and organic farming, all of that great stuff, integration of the land and the natural land and the farm domesticated land, and then also primary forest, which is untouched preserved land.
Can you tell us a little about permaculture and what that is and why it is in use in Mashpee?
Definitely. So permaculture is an incredibly increasing hot topic in our world. I'm just kind of scratching the surface of it. But what I've gathered is that permaculture is a balance between, kind of like what I mentioned, it's a balance between the land as you found it and the land after you domesticate it. And so they're trying to implicate different types of farming techniques that are a little bit more sustainable within the ecosystem. This means instead of using fertilizers, we can use microbacteria or fungus as natural kind of fertilizers. They take the place of the chemicals. They do this by being natural nitrogen fixers. Another way to do this is we spread leaf litter next to the growing trees, which decay and therefore induce the fixing of nitrogen. agroforestry, which is like mixed rotational cropping, means integrating different species of plants and trees all within the same plot, whereas monoculture we know to be one type of plant, one species, just rows and rows and rows for acres. But within agroforestry, we use a plot of land and we integrate up to 100 different species of trees all within that site. So for example, I live on Mashpee Artisanal Chocolate, which is an organic chocolate farm, really innovative on organic farming and permaculture. And what they have done is in between, they rotate in between every cacao row, either citrus trees, jabono verde, which is a nitrogen fixer, and then palmito, which I talked about. And then also they have a man has a seed bank there where they've planted over 130 different species of fruit trees. And so this is a very productive way to farm, but it does take time. The thing with permaculture is you have to plan for the future, which a lot of our society is very focused on the instant gratification, and where permaculture takes about 5 to 10 years of foresight to be able to allow these trees to grow and produce to their optimal production rate.
And would you say that part of your project is to assess the differences in biodiversity between the different land uses?
Absolutely. That's the ultimate goal, is to look at if amphibians can still survive within permaculture, because this creates a harmony between people and environment. This shows us that we can choose to farm or live or whatever our take on the environment and its resources is. It shows us that there are ways that are sustainable. So my hope is to find that there is larger diversity, larger abundance, and greater overall ecosystem health within the permaculture and compared to the monoculture, and hopefully use this to give an overall conservation plan for the area where communities in a similar situation can follow.
We're planning a Save the Frogs Ecuador Eco Tour, and that will be in June of 2016, and hopefully more eco tours in Ecuador after that. Why do you think that people should take eco tours in general? Anywhere in the world, go on an eco tour somewhere different than they've ever been. Learn about the environment. Why do you think that's important or a good thing for people to do?
I think eco-tours are incredibly important for people to take. I think it allows people to get out of their comfort zone a little bit and into a new environment. And this is crucial for changing perspective, allowing for growth, and also just opening your eyes to what's happening in other places within the world. I think eco-tours, as opposed to other types of travel, are especially productive because they allow for an educational aspect. People are going into these ecosystems and starting to learn and understand the places they're traveling in, and also learning conservation techniques, social, how the cultures live and use the land. I think it allows for a deeper connection with the places you're traveling to. Ecotourism is a very up-and-coming segment, especially here in Ecuador. I think that this can be a good thing. Obviously, when you put people into these pristine environments, you run the risk of causing more damage to the ecosystem just by sheer population. But we also have a chance to use this for the greater good. And that is why I think ecotourism can be a positive thing, is it can spark that passion within someone to want to protect a natural landscape.
And what about helping local economies?
Absolutely. So here in Ecuador, specifically, what I've noticed is there have been organizations going into these really bio-rich areas and either partnering with locals to buy the land or buying the lands themselves and creating reserves and using that for ecotourism. And through this, we have created employment for the locals that before would have been most likely employed through extractive properties, such as there are now a huge demand for local naturalist guides, which before may have worked in the oil industry or the logging industry. And so ecotourism is incredibly beneficial for the local economy. Like I said, it's a delicate balance because the Galapagos in particular is facing that right now, where an influx of tourists can actually cause a lot more waste, overuse, things like that. But I think if we do it delicately, it very much so can increase the local economy.
So, Save the Frogs Ecuador Eco Tour. Why Save the Frogs Ecuador Eco Tour, and what's your vision of the Eco Tour?
So, specifically an Ecuador Eco Tour for Save the Frogs. For me, I am incredibly excited that we've decided to do this because it mixes two of my favorite things. Save the Frogs, amphibian conservation and awareness, as well as a country that has my heart. So for me, I think it's going to be a beautiful experience to bring people into all of these things we've just mentioned, the wide variety of ecosystems, the beautiful cultures that exist here, and the ability to make a change within amphibians, which don't always get the level of recognition that you and I both know they deserve. And so in a Save the Frogs eco tour, I hope to show people the beauty of these ecosystems, the cloud forest, the jungle, the páramo, the coast, and within this, show them that frogs exist in every single one of those, and that show them also the threats that are specific to the amphibian populations. So we will be traveling through all of these different places, and within each focusing on education and awareness on how the individual can make a difference with these types of things.
So this eco tour is going to be taking place in June of 2016, and Chelsea and myself will be leading it, and we've visited all these places we plan to take people. And let's just give a quick overview of each place. The first place we're going to go is the Rio Quijos. Can you tell us a little bit about the ecosystem or the place itself, or what people should expect?
Yeah, so Rio Quijos is actually making a name for itself because of the rivers that run right by it. It's famous for kayaking. But what people don't also realize is that it's located in a really neat ecosystem. It's about 3,000 meters, I believe. And so it's coming down from the montane Andean forest and kind of clashing with that Oriente, and which is the jungle. And so you're finding these dense, beautiful forests, but at a higher elevation. So colder temperatures and lots of fresh Andean water straight from the source. So Rio Quijos is about an hour and a half to 2 hours from Quito towards the east.
Okay, and then down into the jungle in the Napo province, Suchipucari.
Yep, so then from Rio Quijos, we'll drop south, pretty dead south, through the cutting just through Cayambe Coca and Antesana National Parks, which are really beautiful national parks here in Ecuador, famous for their kind of iconic volcanoes. So we'll drive all the way through that, at the rolling hills, ending up getting lower and lower as we start to enter the jungle. And then we will, the base of the jungle, kind of the portal to this, is called Misawayi, which is a little town located just before you can get into the deep Oriente. We will be staying at a lodge called Suchipucari, which is about 40 minutes drive on a dirt road from this port, and it's in a secluded area on a transect of the Misawayi River, and it's really beautiful. It's got a forest behind it with a bunch of private hiking trails and lots of frogs that hang out close to the lodge.
The next place, Papayacta.
Papayacta will be our little getaway after spending the days within the jungle. This is a high elevation getting into the páramo ecosystem. It's known for its thermal hot springs. So just as enticing as that sounds, it's an incredibly beautiful place to relax. So we'll be spending a night there, coming back from the jungle before we head into the cloud forest, so people can relax, and recuperate from a hard few days of frogging.
And the next place we go is Mindo in the Cloud Forests. Tell us about Mindo.
Mindo is probably the most popular ecotourist spot within Ecuador, and this is because of its incredible ecosystem. They have fought to make it their primary business, ecotourism, instead of logging. So it's kind of an iconic thing with what we were talking about earlier. They have truly succeeded in making this area known just for its natural surroundings. So we'll be going in and staying at a really beautiful lodge and focusing in on all of the amphibians that are close by and within the trails just below. Most of these lodges all have, are all pretty secluded into the cloud forest, and they have a network of trails that they offer. This one specifically is really quite relaxing. You wake up to the sounds of birds, there's butterflies all around, and if you look closely, you can always find the herp species such as snakes, lizards, and amphibians.
And I just want to add, because most people out there in the world don't know about the geographical ranges of frogs, when we're changing ecosystems here, pretty much all the amphibian species are going to be different. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So like I mentioned, which Ecuador has a lot of with endemism, this is also true with how the species differ between ecosystems. So although the species itself might not be endemic, it usually can be found within a range. And this range is specific to its type of ecosystem. So each species primarily exists within the jungle or the páramo or the cloud forest. And although some have adapted to live a wide range, most of them you'll only find in its distribution area.
And so that brings us to the Pacific Coast, where we are now. You may be able to hear the sounds of the ocean in the background. And we're surrounded by tropical dry forest, a very rare ecosystem. As Chelsea said, 98% of the tropical dry forest is gone. What do you think is special about the tropical dry forest and the Pacific Coast of Ecuador?
Besides being breathtakingly beautiful, the Pacific Coast of Ecuador has a lot to offer. It's a bit more off the beaten path than for your local tourist route, as we are central northern Ecuador, but this allows us to get into an ecosystem that not many people get to experience. The tropical dry forest is incredibly unique. It survives off of its two seasons, the dry season and the wet season, and through this it has created an incredible population of species that are known to exist just in these areas. And like we mentioned, it's incredibly threatened. So with as more coastal development happens, the less ecosystem there is to show the world. And so what we'll be doing here on the coast is we'll be staying at a beautiful hotel called Punta Prieta, and we'll be traveling to the Lalolor Dry Forest Reserve, which is helped run by a local yogurt production, and the Seba Foundation, who I did my semester abroad with. Specifically, what we'll be looking at, we'll be hiking through the different trails and finding which species are present here that we wouldn't have found anywhere else.
And will there be monkeys?
There will be monkeys. You can expect to wake up to howler monkeys every morning. And with this, they're a little bit more easier to track. So we'll go through the jungle, the dry forest, and we'll track those howler monkeys.
Great. And I saw something that I have not seen before. Yesterday, driving around, I saw a lot of shrimp farms on the coast. And I could not tell if they were infringing on the land. Do you think that those shrimp farms, or how do you think that those shrimp farms, which were pretty extensive, are affecting terrestrial wildlife?
Well, it comes back to habitat loss. More land we use for shrimp farming is taking away that natural dry forest that existed before. So the shrimp farming here in Hama, which has increased in demand due to its export, is taking over primarily the mangroves and then getting into the dry forest. And the mangroves are just as threatened of an ecosystem, really, really unique. We have them in the U.S. a little bit up near the Gulf Coast. But here in Ecuador, this is only within this region. You don't find them many other places. And so shrimp farming in particular has taken that space. And so unfortunately, all of the species and plants and everything that did occupy it have now had to relocate. So I do think it's taking a detrimental toll on the area. That being said, it is also feeding many people. So again, it's a very delicate balance.
All right. So I know you have a lot of skills outside of amphibian biology, such as in wilderness medicine, and you are a certified yoga instructor and an excellent writer. You just got an article published in Elephant Journal, which relates to spiritual ecology. Can you tell us what spiritual ecology is and how it relates to what we traditionally think of as ecology?
I would love to. Spiritual ecology is a new phrase that incorporates a very old way of thought. It is the reintroduction of ourselves as members of the land, as opposed to just running the land. So it takes, just as it suggests, it takes spirituality, your practice within divinity and either yoga, meditation, music, sports, anything like that, mixes it with ecology, which is conservation biology and sustainability and understanding the world's climatic and natural processes, and then relating those back to the connection you feel with them. So as opposed to biology alone, where we look at them from a very scientific standpoint, within spiritual ecology, we're allowed to dig a little bit deeper and feel that connection as opposed to just thinking and understanding it. Specifically, I would say spiritual ecology works to bring this awareness to anyone who's interested. It's a very upcoming thing, and what's beautiful is that it's individual. It starts at the individual level. You allow yourself to give back that self-preservation, that self-love, and then once you feel confident in that relationship with yourself, you then give that back to the natural world.
And where would you say that your original connection with the land or with animals came from?
I have a few specific instances that come to mind, but as a broadly speaking, I can say that the more my spiritual and my ecological path, both were growing parallel, and it wasn't until recently that I realized they were indeed intertwined and could not be separated. So my whole history of, I've worked a lot in environmental education, in the outdoors, and then I also studied it throughout college. This has increased my knowledge in the academic side of things, the sciences, biology, practical application of sustainability. Meanwhile, I was starting to deepen my practice within yoga and meditation, and within my yoga teaching certification course, that opened up a whole new opportunity within this, being able to teach. And so this practice has gotten deeper as well throughout my life, about the same timeline, coming through high school and college and now beyond. And then just the past 2 years or so, I remember sitting in Rocky Mountain National Park and having all of this collide into one, and it emerged as spiritual ecology. I didn't know it at the time, but to me it was that now I understood what was happening within the world, the processes, how it was explained through biology, but yet through my spiritual practice, I was able to feel it. I understood that my connection within this ecosystem was just as deep and as true as the other animals and plants living within it.
Thanks for telling us about that. That's a pretty amazing story that you have. And people can find out more about you on your website. Is that true? Onbothsidesoflife.com?
Yep, that is very true. So I have a website where I also update with a pretty regular blog and events and announcements. Lots of Save the Frog stuff going up there. Tons about the Eco Tour as well. So if anyone's interested, that is www.onbothsidesoflife.com. And my email's on there. You can contact me as well. Just a little description on that name that I'd like to share is, so if we break down the Latin roots of amphibian, we get amphi and bio. And so I used that, I translated that into English, and it means, amphi means to live on both sides. It means to rely on both, on two things. So in amphibian's case, land and water. And then bio means life. So amphibian is on both sides of life.
You can also learn more about what's going on here in Ecuador on savethefrogs.com/Ecuador. And you can learn all about the Save the Frogs Ecuador Eco Tour at savethefrogs.com/Ecuador2016. And send an email to me, Carrie@savethefrogs.com, if you have any questions. And Chelsea Carson, it was fantastic having you on the Save the Frogs podcast. And on behalf of Chelsea, we look forward to seeing you out in the wilds of Ecuador on the Save the Frogs Ecuador Eco Tour.
Thank you very much, Carrie. It was a pleasure talking with you, and even more so planning the 2016 Ecuador Eco Tour, and I'm excited for future collaborations.
Thanks for listening to the Save the Frogs podcast.